welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions, produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust. This is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello, today on the Parrot Care Sessions, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Eccles, a board-certified avian veterinary specialist, adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, a past president for the Association for Avian Veterinarians, a frequent lecturer at multiple universities and conferences in the US and abroad, as well as being an author and filmmaker. His forays into filmmaking led him to establish Avian Studios, where he creates educational media that help teach people about the changes they can make to improve and enrich the lives of their companion parrots. Go to avianstudios.com for videos, blogs, and other information on bird care and interesting avian topics. Over the next 30 minutes, Scott and I will be discussing one of the most preventable emergencies seen by avian veterinarians, toxin poisoning. Birds can be poisoned through inhalation, through contact with the skin, or ingestion, and Dr. Eccles is here with us today to help us identify some of the household toxins that can be fatal to our companion parrots, how we can avoid what could be a fatal situation for our companion parrots, and what we should do if one of our birds were to be accidentally poisoned. Dr. Eccles, Scott, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm very excited to be back. I think this is a great opportunity to share information through these podcasts. So I do appreciate you inviting me back.
It's our pleasure to have you back on again, Scott, I can assure you. Thank you very much indeed. Now, we're going to be making a list of common household toxins available for download at the end of this webcast. But let's start, if we may, by briefly defining what a toxin is and what their effects on a bird can be.
Okay, that's a great place to start because, you know, the definition of a toxin is quite complex. So I'm going to try to break it down into, a simple explanation. Basically, toxins are any type of protein or peptide or even a small molecule that is capable of causing disease within tissues. So that disease can be on the actual tissue level where you have tissue death, like a necrotoxin, or it can be on the DNA level, or it can be on micromolecule level. So it can be, it can affect various parts of the cell, but a difference between a toxin and say like a bacteria that could also cause tissue death is that a bacteria is a living organism and a toxin is not a living organism.
Presumably, Scott, because their effects vary so much, there's no way of saying at what level or at what amount a toxin becomes a killer rather than something that causes a sickness that can be recovered from.
It's very difficult to quantify that. And you know, in some animals, they have actually quantified that. And I'll give you an example. Lead is a classic one because it's been so heavily studied because it's so prevalent in the environment. So just in terms of birds, we know how much lead shot, for example, is needed to induce toxicity. We know how much blood level amount of lead is likely to induce some degree of toxicity. And of course, the greater the amount of the toxin, the greater the amount of damage or risk of death can come from that. But in general, we do not have specific levels of toxins for most species of birds and even most species of animals.
Thank you, Scott. Now that we know what a toxin is, let's look at the various ways that toxins can get into our birds' bodies. As we said in the introduction, there are three common routes for a toxin to enter a bird's body through inhalation, i.e. the toxin is in the air and is breathed in, through contact with the bird's skin, and through ingestion through the mouth. Let's look at inhaled toxins first and begin with a brief look at products made with polytetrafluoroethylene, which is much more widely and more easily known as the non-stick coating PTFE, of course. Now, warnings about PTFE and fume fever have been around for many years now, but I think they bear repeating. So, Scott, what is it about PTFE that parrot owners need to be aware of?
Well, first of all, you did a very good job of saying that horribly long word. Yeah, it's a common problem, and it's actually one that, despite the changes in the industry and how they're doing nonstick cookware and the warnings and so forth, it is one I still commonly see with some regularity, as well as other veterinarians, and is commonly discussed. And basically, that nonstick coating is not only used in pans for cooking, but you also see them on some light bulbs, you see them in toaster ovens, you see them on irons, you see them on a lot of different products. And whereas they may be good for that product and that intended purpose, the danger is when that surface that is coated with PTFE gets heated above a certain temperature, and that temperature has varied because the products, the newer products, require a higher temperature before they turn to gas. But when they reach that temperature, whatever it may be, this gas, it's a clear gas, you don't see it. And for you and I, it may not have any effect. We may not notice anything. But for a bird, it's a very serious respiratory toxin. And the primary thing that happens is these birds go into respiratory arrest and failure. And if you look at it, just if you were to look inside the bird, the lungs flood with blood and fluid, and they literally asphyxiate. They can't breathe. The problem is that oftentimes, by the time you know it's happened, it's too late. These birds, once they start showing respiratory signs, the toxin has taken effect, and it is causing massive tissue damage, and subsequent death is going to be the next step. The only chance you have is, if you get in a very early phase, is to get that bird out of that area as quick as possible. So the most common things that I run into that people tell me about are their self-cleaning ovens are left on because those cook at very high temperatures, and PTFE that coats inside the oven, of course, heats up, it releases the gas, and birds that are in and around the kitchen are the ones at greatest risk. And the other one is in cooking. They cook, maybe boil a pot of water or soup or whatever it may be, or cook anything, and they happen to leave a room, forget about it, all the juice cooks down, so now the pan starts to superheat with the food inside, and it releases that gas. And the same thing, you can actually, I've unfortunately dealt with situations where multiple birds were in and around the house, and there's this kind of creeping ring of death away from the source of the PTFE, and you see the birds that are closest, they drop the first, and then the next one's down the line, and the birds furthest away have the greatest chance of surviving. So it's a real problem. It's one that we definitely still see. So I highly recommend that first, never leave a bird unattended in the kitchen where you have the highest risk of this type of problem. And if you are cooking and a bird is there, make sure you're there at all times. The safer thing is to not have the bird in that immediate vicinity. And then second, if you suspect that your bird has been exposed, or you're worried that your bird may be exposed, get the bird outside as quick as possible. Don't waste any time. Don't worry about calling somebody. Get the bird outside and then work on seeing what you need to do, if you need to talk to a veterinarian or so forth.
So from what you're saying, this happens extremely quickly.
It does. It's very fast. But if you remove the bird quick enough, the toxin dose is low enough, some of these birds will survive. So don't write them off, certainly. Do your very best to take care of them. But if you get them in too late of a stage, there is no saving them.
Scott, what are some of the other most common products, the most widely available products that we might have in our home that can cause respiratory arrest in our parents?
Well, the reality is our house is filled with toxins. And in general, if you can smell it, consider it a toxin. Most of our toxins, if we're talking about aerosols, are going to have an odor to them. Cleansers of any sort that have a strong smell, aerosols, sprays, chemical fumes, paint and so forth, those are all potential toxins. If you can smell it, I would recommend not using it around a bird. Now, here's some other things you may not have thought about. For example, dry cleaning. Dry cleaning products, they call it dry cleaning, but it's actually a wet chemical process that is passed through the clothes. And those chemicals are aromatic And as you pick up new clothes from the dry cleaner, now there are some new processes that do not use these harsh chemicals, but the traditional dry cleaning system, those chemicals are a potential danger to you and also to other animals. And obviously to us, we're not going to have an immediate exposure concern. It's going to be more of a chronic exposure concern. But to a bird and a small animal, it may have more serious effects. So if you have dry cleaning, what I'd recommend is airing it out for probably at least 1 to 2 days, maybe in the garage, maybe outside before you bring it in the house. Another one are perfumes and colognes. And there was an interesting study, and this was actually done by a California schoolgirl at a science fair project. She took common over-the-counter colognes and perfumes, soaked a cotton ball with that perfume, and put it in a jar, and then placed a cricket in there and timed how long it took to kill the cricket. And I'll mention the names because it was published. It was published out in a book. And Calvin Klein was the most toxic perfume, killing the crickets in 84 seconds flat.
84 seconds.
Yes. And the appropriately named Axe cologne also was the most toxic cologne.
Wow.
So, you know, these are things that we may not necessarily think of. But like I said, if you follow your nose and if your nose can smell that, then it's probably not ideal. And I think so many products are made to smell like something. For example, that fresh mountain spring smell, we want to have that on our clothes. Mm-hmm. Well, for those of you that have been around a fresh mountain spring, they don't smell like chemicals.
No, they don't. They don't.
They don't. But they don't. Those chemicals are aromatic. And if you can smell them, so can your bird. Your bird may or may not have an adverse reaction to the smell. It's the chemical reaction I'm worried about.
So, Scott, something like a plug-in air freshener, you wouldn't be recommending having one of those in a house that also has birds.
That's correct, yeah. So air fresheners would be another thing, and there's car air fresheners, plug-ins as you're describing, the spray air fresheners, all those I do not recommend to have around birds.
It's quite surprising any of us are surviving at all, isn't it? So presumably here, Scott, we're talking about non-natural scents, scents that have been created by the chemical industry. What about strong odors produced naturally, say from products like vinegar?
Okay, vinegar, that's a good question. I mean, there are some other things, vinegar and alcohol, that at low levels, you know, dissipate in the air very quickly and are not a problem. However, even those items, I don't recommend strong smelling items of any sort around birds.
Scott, we're sort of suggesting there that the household cleaners that we all use aren't really safe around our birds. Doesn't leave a lot of options when we're down at the grocery store. What safe alternatives would you recommend us use to clean our houses?
Okay. There are definitely some safe alternatives. So, you know, first of all, if you have large things like stool is a common example. If we have droppings on the cage, scrape those off. You know, you don't necessarily need to dump a chemical off them. First, scrape them off. And if you want to get off the fine particles, there are several options. One, baking soda and water works really well as a good cleaner. Mm-hmm. Another one is hot soapy water. That's a very easy one. Hot soapy water just to mechanically remove debris and cleaner around the birds. Some of the citrus oil cleaners are okay. They were extracted with some of the harmful chemicals. I don't recommend those, so you may want to look for an all-natural product. Vinegar, as you mentioned, can be fine. Again, just as not as it's not too aromatic. And then grapeseed extract is another one that's commonly recommended. And same thing, these fruit extracts, be careful as long as they are truly a natural product and the area is well ventilated around the bird, I think those are fine.
Thank you, Scott. That's great. Now, if we can, let's turn to dermal toxins. Okay. These are toxins that can be absorbed through the parrot's skin. What toxins are we mostly talking about here? And what are the commonest ways for these chemicals to find their way onto our birds?
Okay. Well, most of them are going to be things that we either put on the bird. So, for example, there are some shampoos and other things that and mists and other sprays that you can spray onto birds. And then also things that the bird will come in contact with. So, for example, things that you put on your skin could be a potential toxin for the bird. And then also things that the bird can rub up against in and around its cage or its environment. common one we hear about is nicotine from smoking. Mm-hmm. And we actually do know that birds will absorb nicotine through the skin when they are perched on a person who has recently smoked. So it's really? Not even the inhaled portion of the smoke we're talking about. We're actually talking about the chemical nicotine, possibly other compounds that are absorbed through the smoker's hands and then subsequently absorbed through the perching bird.
So in effect, we humans can act as a gigantic nicotine patch to our parents.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, the giant human nicotine patch. Exactly. And there's also a lot of other common compounds, and people are becoming more and more aware of these. Now, the real question is, what do they do to birds? And that question is still being answered. What do they do to us? And I think a lot of us, understand that we are surrounded by chemicals. The question is, how do we reduce our exposure? We're not going to be successful in reducing all exposure, but we want to try to reduce some of exposure. So some of the common chemicals that you may find in household products, again, perfumes, colognes, things like that. One is the group of parabens. Okay, so they may be represented as methylparaben, propylparaben, butylparaben, isobutylparaben, and so forth. They're commonly used as disinfectants in products, and they're very well known to kill bacteria and fungus, which is why they're used in a lot of products. So that can be in soaps, conditioners.
Shampoos,
conditioner, yeah. Everything, yes. And so I recommend avoiding products that have parabens on the label.
Right.
Another one are the formaldehyde donating compounds. And most of us are familiar with formaldehyde, which is embalming material. It's also used for a lot of other things. And as you can imagine, it's very effective at killing all sorts of organisms. It's also very effective at inducing cancer. Now, traditionally, you're not going to see the word formaldehyde on a product because most people would run away as soon as they saw that sure. on the label. But what you may see is a little more deceiving. And one of the terms is DMDM. So that's Delta Mike. Okay, that is a formaldehyde donating compound. Another one is hydantoin. Those are the two most common that are seen today in our products. But, these are all things that are going to be, potentially either ingested or more commonly just topically exposed. And we know that parabens, for example, can be absorbed through the skin, at least in humans and in a variety of different animal species. We know that nicotine can be absorbed through skins. Formaldehyde probably can, and phthalates maybe as well. It's still not clear as to how these products are acting.
Sounds like we're surrounded by toxins, Scott.
There's a certain level of paranoia you could have. The thing is, you just try to reduce your exposure. You can't eliminate
sure.
it.
Scott, you referred to ingestion a while ago. That's the third way for toxins to get into our birds, i.e. through being eaten or chewed. Is this the most common way for a bird to be poisoned, in your experience?
I would say that ingestion toxins are the most common form of toxicity we recognize because right. all these other things I told you about, those are going to be a little bit more difficult to quantify. How do you know that the cream that was on your skin that contained the chemical caused the disease in the bird years later? We don't. That's really difficult to do. Right. However, we can say if a bird eats a chunk of metal and it's high in lead, that it's going to likely cause lead toxicity. So it is easier for us to identify and quantify orally ingested toxins. So those, I would say, I would agree with you that those are the ones we most commonly recognize.
Scott, when we're talking about what our birds eat or what we feed our birds, which presumably is the most common way that toxins are taken into the body, we often hear that wild parrots, and I think therefore by extension our own birds, would be able to recognize a fruit that would be harmful to them. How accurate a statement is that?
Well, you know what? This is an important concept, and I'm going to kind of veer just a little bit off, and because I get this question a lot, you know, what should we be feeding our birds and so forth? And we look at wild diets, and we say, well, they eat this in the wild. Well, actually, in the wild, birds are exposed to a lot of toxins as well. Our goal with a bird in captivity and you know, with being the caretaker for that species, is it's like having a child. We're here to guide that bird and to help them make good choices, and also to help avoid putting them into situations that are going to be harmful. And you know, there are a lot of things that a lot of common products that we have around the house that we should avoid.
Plus things like household plants. Quite a few of those are toxic, aren't they?
Yeah, there are a lot of toxic plants that are out there that can affect birds. And you'll see a lot of different lists with toxic plants. Now, keep in mind, these lists are based off of the potential toxicity, not that they're actually been shown. They've actually been shown to be toxic to birds, but they're potentially toxic. So
right.
Some things I avoid are the ones that we definitely know are like toxic. So oleander plants are very toxic. We know that Diffenbachia, the elephant ear type plants, are caustic, so they burn the mouth and the oral cavity of birds. There are things that we know that we should just avoid. We know that alcohol and caffeine are not necessarily good for us, and they're not good for birds either.
Scott, I have to admit that I hadn't realized quite how many fairly common food items were so harmful. As I said, we'll be putting a list up at the end of the webcast. But that list does include some really surprising things, like avocado, for example.
Yes, and keep in mind, there are a number of wild birds that do normally eat avocado. There's many species of avocado, and there's a lot of variation in how birds react. Some birds have no problem with avocado. Others, it causes severe respiratory failure. And as a general rule, I just don't recommend it. It's best to avoid it. Another common one is chocolate. And chocolate, it's because of the caffeine-like chemicals in chocolate. And certainly, I think many people would agree that chocolate is not dangerous, at least not to
No, in the small quantities I'd like to
yes.
use it.
But, you know, they do have a stimulant in it, which is partially why chocolate is so popular, and that stimulant can be harmful. I see a lot about tree woods being toxic. Most of those tree woods are toxic when they're powdered, such as with manufacturing. So you're cutting a branch or sawing it, and you're creating powder and dust, and that's where a lot of those tree woods are actually toxic. And of course, the heavy metals, lead, zinc, copper, mercury, cadmium, arsenic, iron. And out of those, really only about, there's a little bit of copper, a little bit of zinc, and a little bit of iron that's used in body systems. But for the most part, most heavy metals have no place in an animal's body. And, you know, so those are the things we really see that are fairly common. And birds pick up stuff. They find it in their environment. They chew on it. Sometimes they ingest it. Sometimes they spit it out. Our goal is to help them avoid that situation where they're exposed.
Absolutely, Scott. I couldn't agree more. Thank you. Okay, let's now turn to what to do if a poisoning incident should take place. Obviously, as we've discussed, we need to be aware of toxins, the ways they can get into the parrot's body, and how we can keep them out of the way of our birds. But accidents do happen. So, Scott, let's now look at the signs of poisoning, what we can do as first aiders, and what information a vet needs to be able to help us and our birds. So, Scott, first off, what are the signs of poisoning that we should watch out for?
Okay. Now, they can be nonspecific, but let's go through the obvious ones that something is clearly wrong. So you want to look for sudden changes in respiration, maybe rapid breathing, maybe severely depressed breathing. They're not breathing very much at all. Coughing, again, sudden coughing, sudden sneezing. These might indicate some type of aerosol that has really disrupted the breathing pattern or caused some spasms in breathing. Change in behavior is another one. Maybe overexcited, and also depressed. I'll give you an example. A bird that's just eaten the Diffenbachia plant may have a lot of pain in its mouth because it's caused this massive irritation. Just imagine you're eating an extremely hot pepper and we're not expecting it. So,
I can imagine how I'd react, yeah.
Yes. And then another one would be depression. You know, sudden behavior changes. Bird is all of a sudden very depressed. And then, of course, the other ones that are obvious are vomiting, which birds do occasionally. Now there's regurgitation, which is different, but vomiting mm-hmm. is one. And then diarrhea.
And if we see any of those things, or we suspect that our birds have been poisoned in some way, what's the first thing that we need to do?
Okay, first and foremost, remove exposure. So move your bird outside, remove the food. If you can, if it's in the bird's mouth, carefully get it out of the mouth. Wash off the bird with water. I mean, just simple stuff. You want to basically remove exposure to that toxin the first thing. Once you've done that, then call your veterinarian.
Right. So it's, first of all, remove the bird from the problem.
Yes.
I can imagine there are going to be scenarios where a caregiver can't get to a vet immediately or as quickly as they'd like to be able to. Could you suggest any first aid techniques that could be done on the spot as soon as a person thinks their bird has been poisoned?
Sure, and that's sometimes the situation. It's a weekend, it's the middle of the night. So again, we're going to try to remove exposure. That's the first thing. The next thing is you want to offer plenty of water, primarily water, to make sure that this bird has the opportunity to drink and maybe even dilute down the toxin. Another one is keep that bird warm. Don't keep it hot, though, especially if the bird is having difficulty breathing. Last thing you want to do is overheat the bird. Also, keep the bird calm and comforted. We don't want to get this bird's heart rate up, racing, spreading this toxin throughout its body.
Scott, we were talking earlier about just how quickly some of these toxins work. Speed is the key here, isn't it, to the survival of the bird. I can imagine a situation where the caregiver is either on the phone to a vet or is in the car on the way to a vet. What information can that caregiver give to you or another vet that will enable him or her to work as quickly and as efficiently as possible?
Okay, I think I can speak for just about all veterinarians here. One thing that would be very helpful, and that is called the local animal poison control center. The goal here, especially if you're going to a veterinarian, is to find what that potential toxin is and have that information ready for the veterinarian before you ever show up. That would be the most ideal situation, because ultimately, if you bring in a bag of a chemical to a veterinarian, we're going to have to work and figure out what this thing is. We're going to have to take time to call the poison control center and then figure out what do we need to do next. It would be best if on the way to the veterinarian, either you or a friend were to call a poison control center and get as much information and have that information either forwarded directly to the veterinarian or just have it otherwise available, such that when you show up, you already have information in hand. That would be the best situation.
That must save a whole step.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, some other basic things, just real quick, is make sure to be prepared to give some good basic information about your bird, its age, whether it's a male or female, in case it's not obvious, kind of when this happened, where and how, and any clinical signs that you're perceiving with your bird.
Can I just ask, Scott, out of interest, what are some of the advances in diagnostics and treatments that have been made that can be helpful in identifying and treating toxicoses? And has what you can actually do to help a bird changed much over the years?
Okay. Well, first of all, just better understanding of bird medicine has helped us to differentiate problems between infections, toxins, you know, behavioral issues, and so forth. So I think just our general knowledge as time has progressed of pet birds has improved. There are more labs that are servicing birds, bird patients. So that gives us greater access to lab work, both in-house and to be sent out. And also interestingly, because of bioterrorism, there's greater availability of a number of different tests for a variety of toxins as a monitoring tool for that city, state, or region. So we do have better access to diagnostics than we did, say, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we have a better understanding of how to interpret that lab work. And that's just through better education, more and more studies. So, you know, things have definitely improved on the bird medicine front. And that includes with addressing toxicoses.
Really, so compared with, say, 20, 25 years ago, how much higher are the chances of a bird surviving a poisoning incident now?
Well, you know, that depends on the toxin. And again, if we're dealing with PTFE toxicosis, those birds, it really depends on the level of exposure. Either they're going to die very shortly, or they're going to struggle for a while, and we may be able to support them and get them through that. So it really just depends on the toxin that we found. I think that through education, there's better awareness of toxins, and both through people who own birds, because obviously if the owner suspects a toxin and or maybe he's even witnessed the ingestion of something, then the veterinarian is going to be more tuned into dealing with that problem in addition to looking for other issues.
Right. Scott, thanks. That's just a fantastic amount of information you've given us there. Finally, as a highly experienced vet, if you were to advise a new parrot owner, or even perhaps someone wanting to see their existing environment with fresh eyes, what advice would you give a person to help them set up the most ideal and safe environment possible for their feathered companions?
Okay. Well, in general, look at the environment from the bird's point of view. If you're a bird and you are in a cage or out and about in the environment and you can see all these things that you could easily destroy, you know, think about that. Is that item safe for me to destroy? If I were a bird, is that safe? Also look at, like you had mentioned, air fresheners, plug-in things, all that are in and around that environment. Are there smells that we could possibly avoid? Is there other things that we should be aware of? And again, consider from the bird's point of view. If you were a bird and you were in that location, what trouble could you get into? Just think of it that way. And, you know, if you can avoid that, that's probably going to be the best you can do as far as prevention, is really looking ahead, anticipating a problem, and avoiding that situation altogether.
Scott, Dr. Scott Eccles, avian veterinary specialist and adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, thank you very much indeed.
Charlie, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the opportunity to discuss this topic, and I hope that we get the opportunity to do more of these in the future. Thank you.
So do I. Thank you very much. For more information on Dr. Eccles and his work, please have a look at his website at www.avianstudios.com. For more information about parrots and current conservation efforts, please visit the World Parrot Trust on the web at www.parrots.org, where you can also find more interviews like this one with Dr. Eccles and others by navigating to parrots.org/learn. Finally, for more information about me, Charlie Moores, please visit my website at www.talking-naturally.co.uk.